Welcome to Dance Specific Talks. This podcast is made for us dancers, and our goal here is to inspire dancers from all over the world to become better, both on and off the dance floor. We want to provide you with a platform where we dancers can share and learn from each other. So let me introduce to you your host for this podcast, Teaser, and remember as always, by dancers, for dancers.
What's up, party people, and welcome back to another episode of your favorite dance podcast, Dance Specific Talks, released from Be Fit Essential, and I am Teaser, your truly host. Today we're traveling all the way to Düsseldorf in Germany as we are meeting no one else than the dancer Two-Face. So what do you need to know about Two-Face? Well, his real name is Patrick, and he got his name Two-Face in a very funny way. We're gonna ask him all about it in this interview. Two-Face is mostly known for his love for tutting. He has also gone into waving, animation, robots, and a bunch of other styles, but tutting has been what he's been most famous for so far. He has been seen in battles, in theater shows, at workshops, all around the world. We're super happy to have him here on this podcast. Before we get into this interview, you already know what to do. Subscribe to our channels on YouTube and Facebook as Dance Specific Talks, on our Instagram where you can tag us in your favorite episode, and of course on Spotify, iTunes, and all your other podcast platforms. Now, let's get it going. Without further ado, welcome to this interview, Patrick, aka Two-Face, Mr. Germany himself. How are you doing?
Oh, Mr. Germany. Okay. I'm good. I'm good now, and glad that we can do this. And yeah, I'm happy to join this.
Yes, it's been years. I remember seeing you in Gothenburg on, I think it was Hip Hop Revolution, the battle. Yes. You were working in the Swedish Opera, in the Gothenburg Opera, I also think, at the same time. Yeah. So it was very interesting to know that you were there as a professional dancer in your career in the theaters, but at the same time attending all the underground battles.
I mean, it was a coincidence, and I really liked it. So coincidence lead to really great opportunities. Actually, I got requested for judging Hip Hop Revolution a year or 2 years, I think, actually, before I came to Gothenburg. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's a pity I cannot come. It would be so nice. And then I was invited to work there. And I was like, that's an art coincidence. And then I got in touch with the guys who really became really nice and good friends. And during my work with Lobby in Gothenburg, I actually participated once, and the year before that I also judged it. So I really like the vibe, the energies. It's not such a huge event, but it got really cozy and really, yeah, it was really nice and familiar. So it was really cool to connect with people from Gothenburg, because I was never aware that there is a scene. So I was always like, Stockholm, okay, I know there's like some well-known people that I know for years through SDK and stuff like this, like Nikki, Marta, Razzle Dazzle, all these people. I was aware that there are dancers, and also a good friend of mine, Damon Frost. And I was like, okay, there's something going on in Stockholm. But then you go down and you're like, okay, what's going on in Gothenburg? And I see like, oh, there is something going on. It's really like amazing to see.
Yeah, what is such a unique position of Gothenburg is it's in the middle of all the Scandinavian capitals. So it's almost the same reach from Stockholm, Oslo, and Copenhagen, and it's in the middle. So the scene is very warm, and Julian Eddy, who is doing the Hip Hop Revolution, has been doing it for like over a decade. It's very warm to our hearts. So shout out to them for doing this. Yeah. Yes. And what I think it's so cool with you, Two-Face, is that it really your name really resonated with me, because when I saw you on stage and when I saw you outside of stage, it really was like meeting two different people. And I know that you have a very funny story that we're going to get into about this. But just to backtrack a little bit, you are from München?
Yes, is that born right? In Munich, yes.
Yeah. How would you describe the German hip-hop scene to compare it with other countries and their hip-hop scenes?
I mean, it really depends, because like you said, I am born and raised in Munich, moved to Düsseldorf and living there now for, I think, 12 till probably 14 years. And there was a reason for me to move there, because I felt like there is a lack of understanding and a lack of appreciation in Munich. And that has changed most definitely, because there's a new generation, but the generation that I was with, I tried to push so much. I tried to teach and reach out. But at a certain point, I felt like my energy is just gone. I was just drowning in like the feeling that I'm just by myself. So I moved to Düsseldorf because I was passing Düsseldorf when I was the first time at Funkenstars. So it was like a big experience for me. And I was like, yo, one day I have to live there. I have to really experience what is going on and what else can I learn and how can I exchange and how can I be a student again? Because when I started, I just had like a few people I looked up to. And then when I kind of was on their level, I was always seen as like, oh yeah, can I learn from you? I'm like, yeah, for sure. But I want to learn too. I don't want to stand on a spot and not move forward. So I made the decision to go to Düsseldorf. I had this dream to teach there in Tanzhaus NRW. That was one of the most renowned places to teach back then. And yeah, for me, it felt like I need to move on. So the reason why I'm saying it really depends on which place you are. I think there's like a south, then there's the southwest, then there's the northwest, and then there's the east, and in between there's literally not a lot of things going on. So this is really difficult, especially for people who live in cities where it's not so much going on. So we are really spread, like really spread, and this is such a pity, but it brings a really nice and interesting thing with it. And that is that there's literally no dancer who looks alike. So what I saw from people in many different countries is that many people look really similar. You will not have this in Germany. And this is something people could be proud of. But then also there's something where you feel like, yeah, but at a certain point, development gets a bit slow and we have to move on again and we have to exchange again. And people think too much about, I think not the wrong thing, but too much about one idea. And this is such a pity. So when I would, for example, compare with France, where there's so much competition going on, where there's so much, I don't want to say fighting, but there's really like, yo, I want to be better than him and I want to be better than her or whatever. There's like so much competition that it forces people to grow really quick. While in Germany, you had the people who think like, yo, I want to be better than this guy, but I will probably not see him until the end of the year. So that was like a bit weird approach of people and a weird mentality. So it was a good thing and a bad thing. What kind of grew in Germany and grew really popular. So I am from kind of the popping scene, but there's nobody dancing like me. And there will nobody look alike. This is really, really beautiful. And I feel this is the strength of Germany. But then when I compare it to other places where, like, for example, Gothenburg, I felt this warm feeling where everybody wants to exchange, where everybody wants to dance with each other. So I think we miss that a little bit. We have some places, but we need much more like that.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people don't really know how big Germany is. I have been road tripping through Germany and there's like literally highways for just hours and hours. And this Autobahn is just like a signature of Germany and how far the distance is between the cities. I can completely understand what you're saying. And it's interesting that you can see it from both sides. You have this uniqueness about the different cities, but also maybe the lack of exchange and the lack of feeling like a community within one country.
There is for sure some people. You cannot put all the people in the same box, for sure not. There are some people who really, really give so much to exchange and to do sessions and stuff like this. That really exists, but I think it doesn't exist to a certain degree. And this is what I want to say that I think is lacking right now. Mm. I mean, right now is most definitely difficult, but I saw people trying. So I've been in a place with people just doing a session, and we did that until police came and said, like, yo, guys, you're not allowed to be like this big group. And I was like, yeah, for sure. But we tried. And this was not an idea of mine. It was an idea of a friend of mine. So I can just say, without saying too much about who is who, but I was in Bayreuth, and that was really lovely how people approached me. It was really nice. People that I've met just once or twice on an event, and we just talked in session. So they came up with that idea, and I was like, yo, I'm totally down for it. I'm really, really down for that, because that's an essence that I really miss in the whole dance culture right now.
Mm, I really get it. I can't wait for us also to enjoy that even more when we can get back together, like the appreciation of those jams where before we're like, don't really want to go to a jam if there's no battle. And like now we're like have to rethink of what makes us want to come together. And talking about coming together, you started basically in the clubs, and I got some information that your first battle was in 2004 against Kimbo. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah. That's correct. You did your research. That's
yeah,
nice.
Of course. And I kind of just want to get into how that event spiraled you into the life path that you are at right now.
Well, it really impacted me. I don't know if that's correct, but you know what I mean? It had a big impact on me, because I started dancing in the beginning just to impress women in clubs. I was like, back then that was still a thing, the time of B2K and stuff like this, where you felt like, oh, okay, you can dance with a woman. This is something that I really miss also, but it was back then just my main idea. It's like, oh, how can I meet women like that? And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, there's more. When I did the battle, I was like, really like, oof, okay. There's not just this thing that you see on music videos. There's not just a thing that you see in the club. There's much more. I was really surprised, and I went to him and said, like, yo, if you want to dance, if you want to practice, if you want to teach me something, please do so. And he took me with him into another club, or a few other clubs. And then I realized that I was just like 500 meters away from him dancing in one club while he was dancing with his friend in another club. And then I suddenly started to go over, and we were three people, or sometimes four, who danced like literally the whole night, and was like, okay, wow, that's really nice. I want to do more of the dancing rather than trying to impress women with it. Mm. So through Kimbo, I got in touch with some really nice people like McWage, who then also brought me to SDK. I don't even know when it was, but it was quite a while ago. I think the third edition of SDK, third or fourth edition of SDK. So, and then I was literally blown away what's going on. I was like, I saw for sure in the time between that, I saw Jusubu, I saw Funkensize, I saw all these kind of events, but then being part of the whole big thing was such a big difference. And I was like, wow, what's going on? So coming from a club, dancing all night, going to SCK was like, just mind blown, because people were dancing there together the whole time. And I was like, yo, that's what I really want to do. But then there were also the battle aspects. There was also the workshops, also the shows. And I was like, okay, there's so much more. And that had such a big impact that I realized, so there's dancing and only dancing for me until I become a professional or I see myself at a certain spot where I really want to be. Mm-hmm. Not that I really think that way anymore, that I want to reach a certain spot. I just want to continue and want to grow. But back then, that was like the aim.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I know that you get really, really hooked on specific moves within the hip hop genre, not just the whole culture, but specific moves. There was a dance video called Scandalous, a music video. Ooh. And where I know that you get caught on to some of the moves that was in that video. What, like, from a philosophical standpoint, do you think made you like the style of tutting and the waving and those parts of hip hop culture?
Yeah, it's really difficult to answer that because I do waving now a lot, but back then the waving for me was not the interesting part, not at all. But everybody was like, oh, do you see Bruce in that video? And I didn't even know it was Bruce Ikanji. So I watched the video and I still remember the moves that went like out and in and was like, oh my God, how is he doing all these clean, smooth transitions? What is that shape? And for me, it was the shape that really caught me, the shapes in general and the strong movement and the strong shape of this right angle where I felt like, that could fit me. I can see so many things. And every time I watched it again, I could see something new. While with the waving, I thought it's really cool. Same as the gliding and all these things. But I got hooked with these kind of things much, much later. So for me, it was like, yo, I want to do this. And then later I realized, oh, this has a name. What is this all the time? I was like, okay, this is tutting. And then you realize, oh my God, there's a whole style to it. And then people introduced me to popping more and more. And I was like, okay, that's cool. But I was always skeptical because there was not so much tutting in popping. And I was like all the time struggling with it because I wanted to do tutting. But people said like, yeah, it's part of popping. It's under the umbrella. And I was like, okay, cool. Then I've learned popping. And it was so difficult for me because I always felt like I want to connect my arms with each other and want to connect with each body part and isolate. And then people were like, yeah, that's too much of popping to do hip hop and it's too much hip hop to do popping. And I'm like, I was in such a dilemma. So it was frustrating, but also like I didn't want to give up. So I don't know if that answers the question in any way, but this was for me like the stepping point into something where I felt in love with.
Mm. Yeah, it's so interesting to kind of dig deeper into what is it within us that connect with different steps, shapes, instruments, bass lines, like what is it within us? And I think that it's interesting, like tutting is so specific. And I felt that in the beginning, when we start seeing more tutting in music videos and stuff, it was like a trend that every hip hop person had to have a tutting part in every show. Yeah. And the poppers were also like in a mix. Where I started to train my hip hop, I remember the poppers being very in love with tutting and doing it on dubstep instead of on real popping music. But the same critiques were made in the battles. No, you have to groove, you have to be more of a boogaloo, you cannot only do tutting. So was that like a struggle for you as well? You were kind of explaining the dilemma. Yes. Yeah.
It was a huge dilemma and was really a struggle because for me there's this certain thing that was umbrella term popping, wow, never felt comfortable with hearing because I was like, yo, this is so much of an own style. How you can call it part of popping all the time? And yeah, all the movements I did were kind of in a flow, but then still sharp again, and then still a bit static. So people always say like, yeah, you have to do some hip hop basics. So you have to do rather popping than hip hop when you do this. And I was like, okay, understand. So a few years later, I met Salas. And he did similar things to me, but he was so accepted in that hip hop style. So it was like, damn, that's even more frustrating because he's a person who was able to develop so smoothly in his movement. And I had so many people trying to stop me doing it. So they told me like, you have to learn the foundation of popping. And I went to Japan for that. I went for a few months meeting a friend and staying at his house, meeting with Fishboy, with Kite, with so many people. And I was like, yo, I have to learn foundation. So I take their classes. Also at SEK, I took popping classes from Storm, from Wiggles, from so many people. And I was like, yes, that's really dope, but that's not tutting. And this doesn't mean that I didn't like to learn these things. I really appreciate that. That's like amazing how much this took place in my dance right now. But I was always like, why is nobody trying at least? And then when dubstep became like a dance style, when people went crazy, like, no, this is just bad popping. I was like, okay. So I don't agree, but I have to accept it because I'm not dancing on it the whole time. But I get back to it later because we created something called IDF. And this is like a really important part. But in general, what I want to say is that people who did dubstep dancing had like this certain uniqueness that they play with isolations, they play with effects, they play with an illusion. While poppers many times just go so much for the rhythmic and mixing it up with so many things. Dubstep dancers were really specific what they want to do. So I was like, yo, they're like so much in a style. So why not putting tutting in an own style as well? Mm-hmm. So there was this real confusion in my head while I was like trying to build something where I felt, yo, we can hold on to this, but it took years. And yeah. I think nowadays we are on that point where we can say like, there are people you can call tutters, people who do only tutting, nothing else. They dance with their shapes and they create their story with shapes and with like all these kind of angles, they create an illusion. Back then, it was not possible. It was literally not possible. Everybody who did that was not accepted, at least here in Europe. Mm. I think there were people in America, when I saw people, I was like, yo, that's pretty dope. Why is there a whole liquid community? Why is there a waving community? Why is there a robot community? Why is not the same here in Europe? So there were people who were trying to create that, and slowly people from America swapped over, not only here, also to Asia and Japan. So there were suddenly tutting events and tutting battles. And I was like, that's super dope. And yeah, dubstep was like a thing where I felt like, that's really cool. That's something I want to get into, but it was never accepted. And that's why I felt like, how is it possible that this is not accepted? And how is it then possible for tutting to be accepted? Because they also use these elements. So a real struggle. Yeah.
And it's interesting because now when you have embraced what you are and what you like and what you do, like, it's so interesting to see from being from the outside how that has become your official thing. And now, you know, you get jobs, you teach workshops, you can do collabs with people from all over the world because you stuck and were like, nope, I'm going to do this and I'm going to develop this. Yeah, it's so cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I also want to come back to the creation of Two Face, the name. I know that there was an incident with you coloring your hair. Maybe it's hard to see it now because you're rocking the baldness very well. But there was a point where you obviously had some hair. What happened, and how did it lead you into like becoming Two Face?
Yeah, that was actually quite stupid, but also interesting to see. I had hair before. I never had really long hair since I think I started with 16 cutting my hairs, always quite short. Then I had them like a few millimeters. There was in between like four times or whatever. I grew it longer. Anyway, it doesn't suit me. So I can proudly say there was not only one, but two incidences with becoming a real Two Face, or I think three. So the first one was I wanted to participate with my crew, with my B-boy crew at Battle of the Year. So Battle of the Year, you have to know, in Germany, it started out quite different. First of all, it started in Germany, but then also there back then, when I was not even in the scene, there were like crazy amount of B-boys. So we had to do a prelim mission and then also a German qualifier to get to the international. So we won in the South because I lived still in Munich. So after winning in the South, we thought like we have to rock the next one. We have to make an impact. We have to really do something different. So we thought about all the things we could come up with. Wearing white gloves, putting our faces on the shirt, like with airbrush, because we had a friend who did that. And I thought, like, it's not enough. I want to be outstanding. And I told my friend, let's color my hair, because she was a hairdresser. And I was like, yo, let's do this right away. And she's like, yeah, I still have something with me. I just come from work. In the middle of the action, we realized, okay, there's not enough to bleach. So it's like, okay, fuck it. It's okay. Okay, we do the one side and then later we do the other side. She's like, yes, for sure we can do that. And after a while, she said like, yo, I think your idea doesn't work that way. And it's like, what do you mean? It's like you have here white and then there white and then it's completely white or silver. And she's like, yeah, but depending on how long you put it on, how warm it is, whatever, it will look very different. I was like, okay, fuck. Sorry to say that. But yeah, damn. And I just went with that split thing. So first people called me like chessboard and all these kind of things. But after the event where we placed like last, really on the button, we were like, okay, damn. Didn't hit that well. Let's watch the internationals. At the internationals, I go around, look for ciphers because I always love to cipher and try to see where I can be. Then there's like crazy people ciphering. I think Salah was there as well. And I was super quiet. I was like really intimidated at the beginning. And people saw that I could dance and they asked me to come into the cipher. And I was like, no, I don't feel it right now. And then there came one song. I went inside. I went crazy, probably not really as crazy as I think it was, but it doesn't matter. I got out. We continued. And a person, I don't even know who it was. I think it was a French or American guy. And I always try to remember that. And he's like, yo, that's crazy what you did. And then another guy from Germany came. He's like, yes, it was really cool. Are you a popper or a hip-hop dancer? Same discussion again, don't know what it is. But then he suddenly said, yo, weren't you at Battle of the Year in the Germany qualification? And I was like, yes. So, oh, you're the Two Face guy. Because back at that point, I just shaved off my head again. And I was like, Two Face, what do you mean? Like, yeah, you had this hair, black and white. And then you had this crazy solo. I remember you. You were like really like Two-Face. Suddenly you go crazy and abstract, and now too you are like so nice and humble when you're out, and then in the cipher you just went crazy. Two-Face, you're really a Two-Face. I'm like, okay, this name stuck with me. That was meant to be Two-Face. And yeah, back then, IBE, I had a similar situation where I felt like I want to do something different. So I grew my hair as much as I could, what is like not a lot to say that again. And then I just shaved off my beard and my hair on one side. And I wanted to have an impact. And people remember that. That's that crazy dude who shaved like his whole one side, except of the eyebrow for sure. That's, I never knew if that will grow back. And yes, that was another one. So people always remember Two-Face. Yeah, this two-sided guy who can actually be really a nice guy. But when he performs, he can be a bit nuts. So I liked that. I really liked that. I liked not to be able to put in that box.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And it is a smart move because you can always bring out those two sides and people will be like, you know, he's defined like that. It suits him. So like another question on that would be, you know, before, maybe I'm just assuming now that when you were in the battles, it was explosive, it was maybe more aggression and all that. But throughout the years, you have developed your persona both on stage and outside of the stage. Would you say that Two-Face today is just one face? Or would you say that Two-Face today is like 100 faces?
I rather would go with the second one. I'm not sure if it's 100, but I think it became more than Two-Face. And also, there was this little bit of bad taste that people say like, oh yeah, somebody talks about you behind your back, that's a Two-Face person. And I always felt like, yo, but that's not what I want to be. I want to be that person's like a character on stage, but still a normal person, like on stage is an alter ego. But then I realized there's so many different things that I want to achieve and want to be. So Two-Face was just the possibility to be more than one thing, to be more than this specific box that people try to put me into. Just repeating myself, but this will never be put on me again to say like, oh, you're just like that. I'm like, never. I would never say that about myself. Even if I try something completely new, like photography right now, people will say like, okay, he's trying a lot. Maybe he's trying too much, but I'm okay with that because by trying, I will figure out if it's something for me or not.
Mm. Yeah, that's for sure. And from the Two-Face that was in the bottom qualification in the battle of the year, since then you have been doing a massive growth. You won some of the biggest battles that we have, SDK, Notorious, IBE, World of Dance. What would you say have been one of your most important battles that has made the biggest impact of you on you as a person or as a dancer of all of the things you've done so far?
So in general, I think I didn't win so many battles, but I really appreciate that people see it that way. And I think the biggest event still would be for me Funkin' Styles. I'm now part of the organization, but I always want to win this event. I always want to have an impact there. So doing the event just by winning a prelim, it changed literally everything because I got in touch with ZD Larby. I got in touch with many other people who thought like, yo, this guy really is crazy when he's really in it. And even though I was struggling for years to win there, I finally made it 2 years ago in a category where I did not even expect it to win. But it always had influences on me, not only of the competition itself, but also with the people that I meet on the event. I don't want to praise it like to be one of the greatest events, but for me, it definitely was, because in Cyphers, I could just feel free. It was a kind of freedom where people really started to respect me. And I think it's not so much that battle create you as a dancer, because you can win today, lose tomorrow, but when you cypher with elite dancer, you can definitely have an impact because they see you where you really can be, on which level can you compete with other people when it comes to ideas, creativity, musicality. It doesn't have to be a 1 minute thing on a stage, on a competition stage, but it can be like 4 or 5 minutes doing one solo where people like starting to go crazy because you're just so in it. And I had this kind of moment a few times with Junior Boogaloo, with Salah, with Slim Boogie, all these people. And that's, I think, why these people remember me, not because I won any battle, because there's so many people who won battle and so many people who lose battle. So the impact that I've really made were in cyphers at this event. And yeah, any other event really had an impact, but there was always a different one. But for me, definitely Funk and Styles had the biggest impact on me.
That's super interesting. And a lot of dancers who are in the battle scene, some will always just stay in the battle scene. And there's nothing wrong with that. But you took a step at some point to also go into the theaters and also do more artistic work, if you want to call it that, on stages. Where did this turning point come? Because there, for a lot of dancers, that will never happen, or you will never think that you can be in theaters as an underground battler in that scene.
I think it could be possible for everyone. It's mainly a mindset. If you get yourself into working with other people, if you get yourself into opening up to learn new things, you will not have a problem to also compete with people who are really versatile. Because compete is the wrong word, but the learning curve I've made was through theater. And I got through theater the first time in, I think, 2007, 2008. That was still like a hip hop theater called thing with Renegade Theaters. And that was really cool because I worked with Malou Erodo. I'm probably pronouncing her name wrong. I'm sorry. She worked with Pina Bausch and she had a big impact on theater around here in Germany, Europe, France, whatever. And for me, it was really interesting because the first time traveling with theater, working with cool people, working with contemporary people, that was like scratching on surface. But then after the one event where I said, like, where I just won the prelim, I've met Labi, Zidi Labi Shekaoui, great choreographer doing musicals, film, opera, is, I don't know what's the right word, but one of the heads at Ballet Flandern in Antwerp. So really open, versatile mind that I've met, a soul who got in touch with me and I was like, wait a second, who's this person? Where is that coming from? So who is he? And then a few years later, you realize, yo, so many people know him. And I was back then, so like, yeah, who is it? Even though I saw one of his pieces, I was not aware that it was him who was dancing in a piece called Sutra. You can watch that on YouTube. And he was also a choreographer. And I was like, wow, that was really one piece where I felt like, oh, if I had done this, I would have probably done this and that. And all these Shaolin monks in that piece, it was so cool. I was so impressed. And I was like, okay, I meet this guy. And I was like, that's impressive. And we got really in touch. And then he invited me to Japan, where he was working on a production for an anime and manga. And I was like, damn, anime manga? That's insane. I really want to see that. I really want to be part of the process. I want to be able to take a bit of my influence and put it there. And then I helped in a very small scene. And I was like, yo, that's so much fun. That's so, so amazing. So how they develop something and create it to do something on such a different way. And I was like, yeah, that's something that I can imagine for myself too. That's really something that had an impact on me, even though it was just a small thing. And then we worked together in Japan and did a little workshop for a few hours. And he was like a sponge. He absorbed the movements and all these kind of things. And I was like, wait a second, why is a guy who's from a totally different scene absorbing things so easily? And then I realized there must be a relation or a similarity in those dance styles. And as more as I participated in, and as more as I moved on, I realized there is a similarity. I can approach different movements in a way with my own technique and make it look very similar, even though it's not perfect because I can't lift my legs higher, not that flexible. But I was able to be part of it, and that was beautiful.
It's interesting how you can sometimes you find yourself just meeting the right people, and and once you get a foot in of like, oh, I can see myself doing it, the step of going there, and the more you're attracting those people around you. Super interesting. And I want to come in a little bit to your creative part and also the word illusion. What does creativity and illusion mean for you? And how has this way of looking at these two words kind of got you into illusion dance forms?
It's difficult to answer because it came on the way, because I always felt like trying. I have to try something. I have to try again. I have to try different. And that's an urge to search. And that gives you already the fundament of being creative for something. I mean, it's difficult to say like there's a perfect ideal way to say this is how you are creative or this is creativity. I mean, it's so difficult to say what it is, but then people say like, oh, I didn't see that before. I didn't see that. Oh, he's very creative. So I was always on the search when I was young, and I didn't have foundation or anything, but I always want to figure out how can I make something look very understandable in the way of my shapes, and how can I transform this shape to a new shape? How can I deconstruct it and rebuild it? How can I make it disappear behind something and let it appear somewhere else, like magic? And so the illusion is, on my side, I think the illusion is a side effect of searching and trying to do research in one of the styles that fit really well into the illusion dance forms. And tutting, waving, animation, those are all like parts that the whole style is based on an illusion. So it's, you always create that shape, and creating a shape that's not really there is kind of an illusion thing. Being fluid and kind of imitating a liquid form, an organic thing that just feels like, yeah, there's something going on, but I cannot describe it. So what is it? And it's an illusion. We feel like, oh, okay, it's like a liquid. And that it already has the base for an illusionary dance form. So creativity was always like the urge to move, to do it something. And yeah, that's because I've got where I was to where I am right now. And the funny thing is, I don't need to practice physically anymore to create something in my head. And this is the point where I felt like, oh, now I'm really developing like crazy again, because before you had to search, you were like, okay, is that clean? Okay, can I do this? Can I do that movement? Is that working? And now you can imagine it in your hand and you'll be like, yeah, actually that should be working. And then I can do this and this and this and this. And when I have these four movements, then I can combine them with these other four. And in my head, there's a whole thing going on already. And people are like, yeah, what's going on in your head? I'm like, yeah, I'm just creating right now. So being creative and creating something is so close to each other that it's, yeah, it become a thing for yourself when you approach it in a way that it feels comfortable for you.
Mm. And was this what led you into, like, yeah, is this like a group or like the illusionary dance forms? Is it a platform group or how would you explain it?
So illusionary dance forms is, first of all, a terminology for dance styles that look like an illusion. Mm. Like I said before, studying waving animation, those are really based on illusionary movements. But every dance style could be part of illusionary dance forms. It could be a b-boy who does miming and it looks like an illusion, right? So miming is really like something where the technique is shown like as something that we imagine in our head, but it's not really there. So it is an illusion. So the people who came up with it is Robo Z and me. And we were thinking about the terminology because of the whole situation where tutting was always umbrella term popping. Mm. And we were like, yo, but we can do a whole solo. We can do actually a whole show just doing tutting or just doing waving or just doing a robot or animation. So how can this not be a style? And then we did a research. I was a bit like of a critic on the Electric Boogaloos because I was like, yo, beginning of Electric Boogaloos, it was locking, but then they all had their own style. Slim the Robot, Puppet Boozer, all these people had their own style. Why is it now all umbrella term popping? It's such a pity because those styles were really like the thing that made them unique. Mm. And then I talked also to other people like Midas from America. And he said like, yo, I understand people want foundation. They need foundation. That's all good. But back in the days, we all tried to be completely unique. That's why my style never fitted into the foundational. I was like, yes, exactly. I felt the same way with tutting and with my style because I don't fit into popping. And then we were like, yo, what could we do? So we wanted to create this platform, this possibility, this filter for people who were like misfits. Mm. Imagine there's a popping battle and a person who always danced on dubstep music with his dubstep style in a popping battle. He will be probably not even past prelims, as amazing as he is. But then you have people say like, we love your style. Keep on doing this. Keep on going with what you do. If there's no platform for you, like dubstep, competition, whatever, then you're still welcome. Mm-hmm. It's more of a possibility for people to say like, yo, you're not alone. There's still other people who are misfits because they didn't fit in. I mean, imagine Elsewhere. I don't know if you remember David Elsewhere. He was that little, not little, he's quite tall, I guess, but really skinny guy who suddenly became like this weird abstract liquid thing where you feel like, is that even human? So how could he participate in a popping battle? People would just be like, no, that's not popping. And but what he does is so amazing, so outstanding and so unique. So it would be a platform for somebody like him to say like, yo, I can just do me. I don't need to care about whatever other people are there. And you could do like an illusionary dance battle, for example, one day, but it would still be like a discussion. What is it? What is it not? So we kept it as a platform.
Mm.
Platform for people who misfits. Let's say like this.
I like but it. Who,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really like that for this, the people just have to have a style that mixes in illusionary movements, and a simple wave is already so illusionary that it feels like, yeah, why not being a part of this? If you just feel like, yo, I'm a popper, I want to be part of it, you're welcome as well. It's not that we limit on genre of music. We don't limit on the style that you do. We just want to bring people together who likes to do this illusionary thing, who likes to create something, who likes to tell a story with their imaginary whatever they create.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I kind of felt when experimental became a category too. I was like, yes, finally, because like everyone that is in the etc. category yeah. can like finally get to compete. And now, I mean, experimental is developing on its own, but I think that this is very, very cool because it's would be interesting to see that if one day people will start calling themselves illusionists instead of certain maybe, type yes. of dancers.
Maybe, yeah. Yes. But then it's also what I feel like I participated in experimental battles and I won one of the first European prelims of what's called Open Your Mind, what is, I think, a great title for an event. But then I was like, over the years, thinking like, what is experimental? And this is so open that's why I think Open Mind is really a great name for it. But then it's so difficult to have it as a battle.
Yeah.
Because what do you want to judge? Because there can be a person who's just doing nothing, literally nothing, and could be winning something where the other person gives his whole life. You know, this is so, it's so vague, but so interesting. So I would maybe give an advice later, but I think experimental battle is really, really vague. And that's a good thing for some, a bad thing for others. So mm-hmm. I don't judge it in any way, but I think definitely people should be aware that if you go experimental and you just think you have a cool style, there might be somebody else who has just the better idea at the moment. Yeah. And that's so interesting because we are at that moment real artists. And this is, art is always a matter of perspective. So it gives a whole thing where you feel like, why even participating in a competition, in a battle? But then on the other hand, it gives you this, I can do whatever I want and some person might like it. And this is the person I wanted to reach.
Mm.
And this is, you cannot weight it. You cannot say like, this is more worth than the other. That's not possible. No. So it's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's super cool. And I can't wait to see where all of this is going, because as soon as we're adding new dancers, the whole movement are taking new shapes and forms. So when you now look back, I mean, you've been dancing more than 15 years. And when you look back now, what kind of advices would you like to give other artists that are out there trying to do their thing and also want to create a unique style just like you?
I would definitely say what you just said would be do your thing. I mean, I asked myself the same question, is what advice would you give yourself when you would meet your younger self? And I was like, yo, don't listen to other people's opinions, because it's their opinions. It's not, it doesn't have to be your own. And as much as I appreciate how much I learned, I really would have been so happy with myself when I would have been at the point where I felt like, just enjoy what you do. And even if the people judge you in a bad way, continue, because one day people will understand or appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And there's always this thing. Some people might not understand you, but they appreciate you. That's what I felt, the same thing what I just said with the experimental. It can be an art form, so it can be appreciated even though it's not understood. But many people need to understand to appreciate what it is. And there will always be the one thing for one person to say like, yo, what it is for you, it's cool, but I need to do it for myself. And as much as artists do things for other people, because as a dancer, you cannot be a professional when you're not doing things for other people. It's not possible. You live from other people watching you. You live from other people taking your class. You live from you giving other people your advices or experiences. So you live from other people as an artist. But as much as you do that, you have to decide for yourself which way you go. And nobody can take that opinion from you or for you or whatever. So you should be really worrying about yourself, not about opinion other people.
That is beautiful, man. Thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom and your advices and your stories with us. In the end of my interviews, I always do something called fill in the blanks, where I start a sentence and you fill it in with one word or with an end of a sentence. It's really hard because you cannot elaborate on it, but it is fastest reaction, fastest answer goes out. You ready?
Oh, damn. No, I'm totally not ready. But I will say so many stupid things. Oh, my God. I will say, like, what is the best car?
Yeah, I will say exactly. Something stupid. But we can start with an easy one.
Great.
My favorite vegan meal is?
Potatoes. I just love potatoes. I'm sorry.
I love it. I love it. This is the first one that come up. We go with potatoes.
I don't do favorite things in general, but it's like I eat a lot of potatoes.
Mm.
I eat a lot of potatoes. Damn. That's a difficult one. Okay, let's keep on going. I'm curious if I drop something better.
One thing that I love to feed my mind with is...
Oh, shit. I want to say uncomfortable situations, but I'm not sure if that fits.
That's cool. Uncomfortable situations. I love it. I love it. Okay, here we go. One way that I, as a dancer and athlete, train my body is?
Anime.
Ooh, okay.
Anime all day.
Nice. One of the biggest advices I have ever got was?
Be yourself.
There you go. Passing it on. Love it. When I, as a teacher, go into a class, I always try to
not expect anything.
Nice. And when I stand on stage in front of other people, I always want to
be free.
Before I step into a battle, I prepare myself with
nothing, literally nothing.
Love it. And when the music hits me, I physically feel.
Again, freedom.
Nice. Okay. Last one. If I had to stop dancing tomorrow, what is my legacy to the dancing?
That I let up to them, because I cannot say that. I'm sorry. Sorry that I have to interrupt that.
No,
but
it's good.
I don't build my legacy for myself in a way that I say, like, I want that and this, especially because it's art. But I hope I leave something for some people that people say, like, yo, he was the guy that. But if it's not, then I still have to accept that I loved what I did.
Oof, that is a good one. Okay, so I'm going to hit you with the last thing.
Oh, that was okay. I thought that was the last one.
Yeah, but now when you said it, I want to say one more thing.
Okay,
so,
okay.
One thing that I have yet to accomplish within my dance career is
that's so difficult. Oh my God. Loving myself the way I am. Because I'm always criticizing myself. That moves me to keep on growing. But at a certain point, I hope I can just love myself the way I am. Just without any more development, just being like the way you are. And
that hits me hard, because that is a journey I think we will constantly have throughout our life. It will never end. So thank you so much for that.
No. I thank you, because that's really interesting. It's the first time I had to fill gaps, and I feel like right now in my head, I would probably switch one or the other. But yeah, I think that's really interesting and something that we should ask ourselves more often. But especially on the last one, I think and I hope some people achieve that already, because I feel like people that I look up to still struggling with loving themselves and what they do. They're always like, oh shit, I'm still not good enough. And some people, I think they have it. They just say, like, I don't care anymore. I'm just let it go. And I'm just feeling what comes to me. This is like this, what people think always, like there's a higher level. I think this is the highest level, to just accept everything, continue practicing, but accept yourself the way you are, is such a high level that I still want to achieve.
Yes. And yeah. And what comes to mind when you say that is definitely also the balance of how do we keep pushing ourselves to want to do more and to develop and not be too comfortable and too satisfied, and at the same time be satisfied and be proud and be loving. And that is the golden ticket right there. How do you do that?
Yes, that's amazing. That would be I don't know. Can I ask you also a question? I don't know if you want to, usually the interview cuts here or finishes here, but I'm curious because you asked me those questions and I'm curious about, you said there's like this couple dance and probably other dance styles that you did, but I said at a certain point that there is a relation, there's a similarity. How many similarities do you see with the couple dance? Do you think there could be a new evolution of urban and couple dance? And I see it always people trying, but I don't see it really like a thing becoming. So do you think there is a possibility, there's so much similarity that urban styles, illusion styles, any styles could become a real essence part of the couple dance?
When you say that, I get super excited because that's definitely what I feel. What I love to see is that blend, because in our urban community, if we want to call it that, there's so many dope combos, collaborations, and visually pleasing elements, more pushing the boundaries of what we can do with two bodies combined or several bodies combined. What I sometimes lack within the choreographed pieces that we usually do in the urban scene compared to what we have in the couple scene is the natural chemistry of following and leading and that becoming one energy, because that is what normally in couple dancing, that's what you do. You become one energy and it's not choreographed. And a lot of times couple dancers should definitely get more creative, because it's sometimes you can see hundreds of salsa shows or bachata shows or kizomba shows and the creativity is so little, because it's a set form. You're supposed to do certain tricks, you're supposed to have a certain expression in your face, you're supposed to tell a very either a love story or a passionate breakup makeup story, you know what I mean? And it becomes a little bit stereotypical for me sometimes, coming from the hip hop scene, where it's like, what if the person you dance with represents your father? What if the person you dance with represents yourself? And how can you play with that? And the creativity could be so much more. But I would love to see what happens in the urban scene if you learn to follow without choreographing. Or to love to learn how to both lead and follow and just let that energy lead you instead of focusing on making it into something. So I don't know if this leads you to something, but I'm very happy you asked me a question, because it didn't happen a lot yet in this podcast. So thank you for that. Thank you for bouncing back with me.
Actually, I would have a lot of them, but it's up to you if you say like you have to cut here because it's getting too long. I'm really chilling.
But I definitely think that we could do a part two.
Would be appreciated. This.
It would be lovely. And before I let you go, I just would love if you can tell everyone who's listening to this podcast where people can find you, which social media platforms should they look up to find your new projects and videos and everything. The mic is yours.
The mic is mine. I appreciate that. I'm easy to find. It's Art Two Face, two as a number. And that is literally on IG, TikTok, on Bigo, on probably other platforms, but that's the main source that I use, the main name that I use for all my sources. So that would be the easiest one. If some people want a game, I'm also down for that. That's Two-Face Germany. You can find me as well under that name. But yeah, I will come up with a YouTube channel and probably a Twitch. And that will be probably also R2Face if that name is not gone yet. So R2Face it is.
Awesome. Looking forward to see what you can do in the streaming community too. And take us dancers with you, man. Like open that door so we can get in.
I will try. I'll definitely try. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time. And hopefully we get to see each other soon in real life.
I hope so too. I hope so too. So I also hope that there will be something possible for you. I hope your moving will be a great thing and I'll keep on going. I'm curious to see who else is there that you interviewed, and probably will look all at all of them, but I want to see, so where is that going? How's your path? So from my side, all the best of luck for it. Yes. And send you positive energy.
Thank you so, so, so much.
Don't forget to click subscribe, comment below, and give us a rating or review. We have a Facebook page, YouTube page, and we are on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, and all the other podcast platforms. We also have an Instagram, so don't forget to tag us in your favorite episode and share it with the world, because we read all of it.